How much time do you spend looking at your phone or the internet? Well, if you're like most people, you check your phone at least 46 times a day. That's according to Deloitte. Another survey finds Americans spend 4.7 hours a day on their smartphones. The political commentator Andrew Sullivan was doing that and more until he realized it was breaking him. He writes about that in New York Magazine and joins us now via Skype. Andrew Sullivan, welcome back to Here and Now.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And when did you realize that being online and being distracted by your phone, which is now so common for so many people, was becoming a problem for you?
I think it crept up on me slowly and cumulatively. I noticed that my actual health was declining. I was exhausted. My time with my husband became pretty attenuated. My friendships began to atrophy. And I found it incredibly hard to unwind at the end of the day. I found myself unable to really maintain the concentration to read a real book. And when I tried to meditate, which was one way I thought of grappling with this, my mind just wouldn't take. It was so already geared towards this instant distraction culture that I couldn't even calm it down. Until at some point I realized, you know, it's a zero-sum question, this. We've deluded ourselves, at least I had deluded myself, into thinking that I could have my cake and eat it too, that I could be online but still in my regular world. Over time, I realized, you know, that's just not true. You are where your attention is. If you're involved in the web, you're not actually with your friends. You're not with your spouse. You're not with your kids. You're somewhere else.
So you said enough. And you went to a meditation retreat.
Well, I said enough and I quit everything, and which was, it shows how desperate I was, and started seriously attempting to meditate and to actually get myself offline increasingly. And I found that quite easy. I think I was so exhausted by the whole thing that it felt like a relief for a while. But nonetheless, it was still there. One still felt the urge to get that little dopamine rush, pick up your phone, until eventually I did decide to do the full detox and go to a 10-day silent meditation retreat where I would have no access to the internet. I wasn't even allowed to read a book, where I simply had to be alone with myself and the world for 10 full days and nights. But it was kind of, I thought, the real cold turkey, hard detox method that I was trying to do to remember what it used to be like before I was in this matrix.
And as you write, it was not easy. This was very emotionally difficult to disconnect in this way and have to be alone with your own thoughts.
Yeah, there's a reason we don't like it. there's a reason we, you know, even when we're waiting in line for coffee now, or even when we're in the bathroom, we want to suddenly distract ourselves. And what surprised me, it shouldn't have really, was that when you remove slowly all the distractions that you're using, you come face to face with what you're distracting yourself from. And that can obviously mean many different things for different people. We all have deep and underlying questions and anxieties in our lives. We also all have, at some level, you know, an existential dread, a sense that we're here and we die. And the modern world has conspired brilliantly to enable us to forget about that constantly, as if we're not actually mortal creatures, and that we don't have to ask ourselves, what on earth are we doing in this universe right now? Because those questions, of course, are terrifying. It's just that we've been able in modernity to really anesthetize ourselves, and the form of the anesthetic is distraction. And we have now developed technologically a mode of distraction that is now so pervasive and also permanently with you in that little phone that everybody carries around.
But is it possible to get away from that? You know, when I go on vacations, I take the Twitter and Facebook apps off my phone for the entire time. But then when I come back, you know, it doesn't take more than a day or two to put them back on and get right back into the swing of it.
Yeah, it's tough. The hard thing is, of course, using the stuff, because the internet's a wonderful, amazing thing. And of all people, I jumped into it with huge enthusiasm. And I still am hugely enthusiastic about the world of information at our fingertips. The key is some sort of balance. is how do we stop this little dopamine hits we get anytime someone says something that you don't like or really like on Facebook, and or someone posts a new photograph or likes your new photo on Instagram. How do we wean ourselves off that so that we're not doing it in a manic, constant way? And I think it requires, real self-discipline. And we just, as a society, I think this piece was trying to say, it's time to try and master this. We love this new toy, but like a kid, all we're doing now is playing with it. You know, studies will find that your average 30-year-old is spending up to 5 hours a day on the phone.
Yeah.
The younger kids are engaging entirely with the world through a screen. And the point is that we have to rediscover how amazing it is to live life actually available to the human beings around us, to spend time, which is the most valuable commodity of all, with actual other tangible physical human beings. And also, I think, critically, to gain some silence, to actually have some quiet, just to find some moment of calm in our day. That is becoming harder and harder. And also our attention spans, of course. The value and reward we get out of reading a book, a real book, that we can lose ourselves in for a period of time without wanting to say, oh, I want to distract myself with this quick hit.
Yeah.
See who he emailed me, see what the instant message is. And then, of course, work adds a whole nother layer on it. So many of our workplaces now demand that we be on social media, demand that we be part of this world. And it follows us home. And now it follows us everywhere. Aren't you amazed? I mean, I look around me now and I see all these people with their heads down all the time.
So have you been able to not be one of those people with your heads down after the meditation retreat?
Well, yes and no. I certainly didn't write this piece saying, I fixed it. I've managed to overcome this. You all need to. That's not where I was trying to say at all. I'm still besieged by it. I think finding ways to manage it, like maybe taking a day of the week as your digital Sabbath and saying, I'm not touching it today. Or maybe just putting some time constraints on it. Like after a certain time in the evening, no more online interaction. The number of parents that are sitting with kids around a table, and it's what Sherry Turkle, the writer, calls being alone together. Everybody's on their device. No one's actually engaging one another. And that means you're not really having a relationship with them. And if we only have relationships with abstract entities online as opposed to actual physical, awkward, flawed, but fascinating human beings, we're really making our lives much shallower than they need be. We're missing out on life. I mean, it struck me this is a way in the end of not living.
Right now, for a lot of people, the distractions that they're going to their phones for are related to this election, which is coming up
Yes. In
just 1 month. While we have you, because I know that you too, even with all of this thinking that you've been doing about being distracted, you're very interested in this election. You've commented on it. What do you think, Andrew Sullivan? What goes through your mind just a month before this election?
Terror. I'm terrified. I really believe that one of the candidates, Donald Trump, is a unique threat to peace in the world, to civil peace in this country, and possibly to our entire liberal democratic system. I've never come across a character quite as dangerous or as menacing as this person, who has evoked the kind of passions that he's evoked, and who, if he were to win, would have nothing to restrain him, because he would win the House and the Senate and be able to pack the court, and who has expressed a desire for a kind of authoritarian government. He's a wannabe tyrant that people seem to want as a tyrant, and so much is at stake. Everybody says this about every election, and many elections have been extraordinarily important in the past. This one is really, I think, for me, life and death for this republic and the danger of this man, his unpredictability and instability, and to put it bluntly, fascistic tendencies in terms of his support of violence, his contempt for dissent, his disdain for freedom of the press, his desire for personal retribution against his enemies. All these traits that we must know by now from history are deeply dangerous, is really closer to coming to power in this country than any time in my lifetime. And so I wanted to disengage. I really wanted to write about religion and to figure more deeply about technology. But I can't, you know, on my iPhone, I have a constant, I have an actual icon that can give me the latest polling results for everything. And I'm checking it three or four times a day as a way to sort of kind of comfort myself. I mean, I think I'm not kind of the only one waking up with panic attacks, with anxiety about this person. Now, maybe he's gotten under my skin, but I've read enough history. I know enough about how government works in this country to be deeply afraid.
That's Andrew Sullivan, contributing editor for New York Magazine. His piece, which we'll link you to at hereandnow.org, is called I Used to Be a Human Being. Andrew Sullivan, thanks as always for joining us.
You're so welcome. Love your chat.